talk to officials and other entities who are here, and maybe Frank Jenkins can help if I'm wrong. As far as I know, it's since 1998 when I began to chair a permanent committee, so to speak, of the adult committee. We were unable to finish our legislative program in most of the committees. So what we would do is we'd have parallel sitting sometimes, we would break up the committees. We were the first committee to do that I know of at that time. And we checked with Parliament's lawyers at the time. Now, unless the new rules have changed things at the bit. As far as I know, a subcommittee can meet. It cannot be a closed subcommittee. A subcommittee can be closed, but a committee meeting cannot be closed except for intelligence search. And if you want to seek a closure of a committee, you can apply, I think, to the speaker. But you can explain the process very quickly, but we know that it's a legal process. Now, the subcommittees we use usually have one representative from each opposition party and two from the ANC, sometimes three. No decisions a subcommittee takes these panels. It can only make proposals to the committee. Usually what used to happen is most of the time the subcommittee took decisions, the committee ignored them. They questioned them, but the committee ignored them. In the spot there time, we had dared deal with some bills. I think that's going to one other. And we went in this room and so on, and DA came to most meetings, not all. The other thing to say is the property rates, the DA and all other parties, probably because they didn't have the stamina. And they said so. We used to sit at 2 in the morning. They would not attend. We did not, and I'm not trying to say this, we did not undermine the decisions of the subcommittee, which are all proposals. They have to be considered further by the committee for finally approval or rejection. Those decisions were never questioned. I also understand that if you have a quorum, it doesn't matter if they all come from the same committee. If the opposition party, that they sometimes do, refuse to vote, if they don't come, but the ANC can get to pull out the quorum right in the House. We could get more than 50% of the MPs in the House, even if not on the party today, but the quorum is 50% of the ones that fell out. So basically, whether the DA comes today or not, it does not undermine this process. Nothing we do here can define this, not our process. The second thing to say, it's possible there was a misunderstanding, I agree, on the rejection between the DA and the chairperson himself about whether today's meeting is going ahead or not. But at different times, in the 48 hours, firstly, the note very clear that if we don't finish by Tuesday, after Wednesday we will meet on Sunday, it's there. But then we just looked around and asked individuals if they're on duty to write their statements on Sunday, then people didn't seem very happy. As suspected from last week. So we said the subcommittee will continue. It is highly unlikely the subcommittee will finish its work, especially if your call chairs and the committee's call, whether you want to end the 12:30 and continue. If you do continue beyond 12:30, we have a 3 o'clock management committee meeting, we put it back by half an hour. So we'd like if possible for you to finish by 3:30. We are management committee. We can't come to an end. This is your priority. The other thing to explain to people, a subcommittee chair has all the rights of the committee chair. So if he rings Adam, or he speaks to Antonia, or he speaks to Roy Hallerman, the same would apply as would apply to a chair. So on those grounds, I mean, on what I have said, Frank, is that largely accurate, or am I wrong? Maybe I've said that wrong.
Except the issue of, everything is correct except the issue of closing of a subcommittee. Yeah. A subcommittee is the same as a committee. And it's a subcommittee only in name, it's not a formal subcommittee, it's just the operational procedure of the Standing Committee on Finance. There's nothing inappropriate about working in this manner. Committees in any case in control of its own proceedings. But like the main committee, a subcommittee cannot be closed unless we comply with the constitution requirements. It's reasonable and justified in an open democratic society, so it is open, unless it's closed. And there's a procedure, and you correct the chairperson, that you have to go to the speaker and advise them that we want to close the meeting and follow the rules of this. The issue of the quorum, you're 100% correct. The subcommittee doesn't take decisions. Subcommittee is a process, a mechanism. You don't even need a quorum for a subcommittee to proceed and report back to the committee for the committee to take a decision.
That's down there.
Thank you, Eunice, for those clarifications. I think what we proposed with the discussion with Treasury colleagues that we are finishing at 1300 hours. If we are not done by 1300 hours, we proposed and agreed that we'll reconvene on Monday, we'll be in Pretoria, and those who are in Cape Town may join us through the video conference, and they will be able to finalize things by Monday. So I think that's what we agreed upon. I did speak to Brendan about that, saying that can he join on Monday in Pretoria. He was quite happy to do that, but obviously it was before the events of yesterday afternoon. So I'll still check with him and let him know that if we are not finished by 1300 hours today, that we'll be finishing on Monday in Pretoria. Am I correct? Thank you. Treasurer, Roy, we are dealing with Schedule 4, am I correct? And did you agree that we are going to start with what is termed duty controversial?
Yes.
For a lack of a better way. and secondly, just to make sure that we're in the same, we're singing from the same hymn book, let's just again just recap as to why we are busy with the stages now, and where do they emanate from, and why is it important that we should do it.
Itself is just a little bit odd because it's all the same person. Actually, there are two people. One guy is the registrar of banks, the registrar of mutual banks, and the registrar of other banks. And another guy, and there are guys here, not particularly gender diverse. I think the other guy is registrar of insurance, short-term insurance, long-term insurance, collective investment schemes, pensions, and so forth. Registrar, in our view, is quite an old-fashioned term. replacing the word registrar with the word authority, and we're doing some other things to align the legislation. That isn't controversial at all. Hardly anybody even commented or noticed those changes. However, we are making proposals in three pieces of legislation as part of the Twin Peaks process. The first set of proposals are in the Financial Markets Act. And those proposals are primarily to implement G20 commitments. The majority of the G20 commitments were actually agreed to in the G20 meeting held in Russia in 2013. And we agreed to introduce a framework for recognizing jurisdictions other than South Africa to ensure that you could do cross-border transactions in other jurisdictions. And that was an outcome of quite a long process of engagement between a range of people. Our minister wrote a letter to the US Treasury Secretary together with about 20 other ministers of finance, and there was a huge political push to introduce this idea of equivalence in financial markets. So that's the one big change we're making. It has been very the JSC is not in favour of, I don't think they're actually even in favour of the equivalence regime. We'll explain that when we get there. The second set of changes are to the Cooperative Banks Act. The Cooperative Banks Act, and I think this relates to sort of one of the issues the committee raised yesterday, which is we created something called the Cooperative Banks Development Agency, and really it's trying to help and facilitate the emergence of small cooperative banks in South Africa. We've had the act for a few years. To be honest, we've only had two cooperative banks established out of the process. We are doing quite a comprehensive review of the Cooperative Banks framework, but in the meanwhile, we are proposing some changes to make the Cooperative Banks Development Agency more efficient and effective, and are explaining exactly how the relationship between the Prudential Authority and the Cooperative Banks Development Agency will function in law. I'll explain in more detail when we get there, but one of the things is that more of the responsibilities of supervising Cooperative Banks will move across to the Reserve Bank, and more of the development responsibilities, so helping Cooperative Banks develop. That will be with the Cooperative Banks Development Agency. Up to now, we've kind of, I think, confused the mandates of the Cooperative Banks Development Agency. They do both supervision and development, which is a quite and we'll have that in a Financial Advisory and Intermediary Services Act. There has in the past been difference of opinion about the interpretation of certain clauses in the Financial Advisory and Intermediary Services Act, particularly around the definition of intermediary and around issues around bond. We are proposing to clarify the law in a little bit more detail. The CISA did raise some concerns on the draft of the bill that was tabled. We met extensively with them, and today we are, what's in your pack is actually a slightly amended version of it, and I spoke to CISA yesterday afternoon, and they said they have actually, it was actually a minority view of the CISA members, it wasn't actually the view of the CISA membership as a whole, and after having seen this, the changes that we are proposing, they're happy with those changes. So that issue is, I think, disappeared. So to quickly summarize, four things. The first is that these are very straightforward amendments to get the show on the road. However, there are changes to the Financial Markets Act, the Corporate Banks Act, and the Financial Advisory and Intermediary Services Act. And the Financial Markets Act is the most important. So I think that's where we are.
Thank you. Can you then start?
Let's get going on the Financial Markets Act, since we can start with the difficult thing. Actually, I am not the Financial Markets. So I'm going to ask Petula, who is our financial markets expert, to just quickly go through these things and explain, how many years has it taken us to find the central counterpoint? I think you haven't been. Chair, she'll explain to you what we're proposing to do in the schedules. We apologize again, there aren't page numbers on the schedule, but it is Act 19 of 2012, which is
halfway. We have actually printed out a few copies with page numbers, so we can just pass them out.
No, it's fine. Just tell me what the other is.
Can you pass one this side, please?
Yeah, okay. Oh. So, for those of you with page numbers, you lucky people. I'm getting mine. I'm going to give mine to somebody else. So, I will do it after.
Wait, I haven't found the page number.
68. Yes, 68. Yeah, 68 for those of you who are lucky.
The most controversial part is actually near the end. Easy stuff is at the front.
That is complete abstract.
Yes, actually, the acts are labeled chronologically. But it just happened that one of the newer acts is that this is the most controversial.
Okay, just before, a high level comment for me is that I find it a little bit odd that people who always favor globalization, and then when you must act as a global player, then they put an issue. But let's get to that.
Yes, I agree with it. It is a problem to maintain therefore the opinion might be also want to not stifle innovation in the market. So the amendments that we have proposed, in a way they can help with the monopoly of the JC, but I think in our view that is also an opportunity for the monopoly to innovate, because that is what has happened with COVID. And the stock exchanges 10, 20 years ago, you know, they primarily specialized on trading, you know, but you know, with the mind of regulations that have come, they started to innovate. You know, there's been a lot of consolidations that they've branched out to you know, other services that actually add to the value of the entities themselves. So because there's this mandate that's coming from the GPT, it is necessary that people introduce these regulations that will impact on it. So in a way, we're not forcing the GPT. Well, we are, but I mean, it's something that was inevitable. I think when we look at what's happening globally, you know, there are very few traditional stock exchanges that have played such a dominant as with currency. If you look at the London stock exchange, they own several exchanges. They own the London Stock Exchange. They are partners of what you call multilateral trading facilities, which are multilateral exchanges. They launch out to services. So they've been innovative in response to make the market less concentrated and safer, but also enabling participants to act to participate in the global market. So this is our view that, I don't know if I'm being, quite controversial, but yeah, most of the objections we have been raised,
anyone would like to add to this?
No, I just want to ask, so once this comes into effect, right, then what would happen? In other words, their monopoly would become, it would be removed, right? So who would be their competitor? I'm just saying because I don't understand the financial market. And really, because the JSE is so important, wants to, what's the advantage of having a closed meeting also? I think members generally feel freer to expose our ignorance. No, I never do. If I don't understand something, I say it. But I notice members, I notice it a lot. It's up to them to be frank. I actually don't fully understand what we mean, but I go by the majority. I mean, people like the chair, they probably understand more than I do, and I hear also, and then people like, no, Pinky and you are the same. It's just that when you're chairing, you know, you have to be more or less, because that's your job. But you see, there's also Brendan and this fellow, Mr. Reese, and they have a lot of experience, that's their profession. Right? So when, you know, there's a consensus amongst people who know, then I say, okay, fine, I need to find out later. But this thing, I know I'm going to be loving. If you're the chair of a committee, I mean, people do ring me. I guess get closer to I'm almost most of the phone, you know, as if you were able to do anything. You don't understand the role of the chair. I say, I can't make decisions. You can only go to a committee. So when I ask them to write formally, then I can table it in the committee. Often they don't do. So what I'm saying here is, I agree with you personally, to the extent I understand what's happening. So if you go ahead and do this, who will be their competitor?
Before you come in, guys, also talk about the equivalence. Talk about licensing. But in South Africa, the main thing that and rightly so that this comes up, what's going to be the effect of what we're doing on economic growth and employment, because that's what gets thrown around, that that's what we're doing and so on. So I think we should be very clear as to what ends up being the impact of the amendments that we were proposing to those greater economic imperatives of the country.
Now is a lot of who is applying and
which has been raised there about the impact of electronic economic growth.
And so, John, to answer that question, but just to highlight, this isn't the exchange business with Jason, so this isn't actually the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. It's actually one of the businesses that they have in their group of companies, which is the, they call it JC Care. So this doesn't actually affect the exchange. It's actually a business they don't, it's a business they want to build, not a business they actually have. So that's just quite an important thing to highlight. It's a big thing. This is not difficult, as Tina said, the framework for competition in, on exchange existed, well, existed since 2012. But we're not affecting that at all. It's actually a business that Jason would like to have, not a business that Jason currently has.
Large, and
particularly if we are treating economic interests of this country to aid that multilateral institution. Obviously, we should take heed of what the standards are, right? But we also need to look at our own growth, our own needs, and presumably some latitude, right, to like change things to suit your conditions and your standards. The question, Antonio, I think we must think about is, how to say something about that? That actually we shouldn't just succumb blindly to what the OECD says or the G20. Well, the UN is a bit more challenging because they, you know, in theory at least, treat countries, they're not standing in the Security Council constitution, so relatively equal. But now, the OECD, G20, or power relations in the global economic and political sphere. So the first point I want to do is something the committee needs to apply its mind to, so the economic culture, that we need to urge Brazil to be clear in its policy papers and in the bills it brings to us, how what is required of us actually assists our own growth. I don't think that's clear enough. I don't think that it's a fair question to ask ourselves. It's really something we should raise more when we come back. Maybe table it as a question. Nothing prevents the three or four of you here, or more, saying what you want to as your tentative responses, right? But it's really like a policy decision in love with TG, in this case, more than this acting on behalf of TG, the DG, or the minister. The second thing is, you know, you said, what's your name, sir?
Petula,
you said that, you know, I said, what happens if now we go ahead and do this, right? Who would compete with the JSC? And then gave me my answer. Well, part of it was that a powerful foreign state would be. But it's true that you have advantages. In the globalized world, you can't operate on this point, right? But on the other hand, there's also things like national sovereignty. And there are things that we have to do to protect, if you like, without violating WTO and other regulations. There's no choice to apply to whatever we think. I don't know, in trouble. There's also this thing about allowing, as far as possible, domestic forces, in this case, business, capital, finance, as much as we want to globalize the world, to have the weight that, I'm not talking about any protectionism and analysis, but to have the weight that they should. So when you speak like the way you do, I understand what you're saying, but I also get a bit cautious about what does it actually mean. I'm not saying we should drift away from what we are at yet, but I'm just saying that we need to have some checks and balances. You know, the executive in the first instance, because you have the capacity, we don't, right? And you have the experience, if you don't. You go to these G20 meetings and so on, and you get a feel of what's happening in the global world. And while we have to abide by these standards, otherwise we're in trouble, we also need, where possible, to be sure that our NDP and so on aren't really interfering. More than the NDP, the full corpus of policies that the majority party of policies and a recognition that, yes, we're the part of the global as well as the world, but at the same time, we need to not forego our sovereignty, we need to not make ourselves weak at the international level.
I'll answer the first question and then two answers. But I'm, as you say, I'm only answering at the moment, actually, in that exchange in more detail, because he has been, I think, involved in the G20 in some way or form since his previous job, where he was head of our international mission. It is a frustration in the G20 that, first, an advantage and a disadvantage of the G20. So, previously, we had the G7, and then there was the G8 as the major global forum. And then after the 2008 crisis, there was a bit of a revolt, I would say, or a revolution, perhaps, 20, which is now the 20 largest, actually I think technically they're 21 combined, but let's just say the 20 largest countries in the world. There is obviously still some tension between the seven largest and the other
20.
So we technically aren't the 20 largest in the world. I think we're 22 or 23 now, but we negotiated quite hard, so we're voting, which is quite nice. I think this process is also, like I said, our minister joined together with a bunch of other finance ministers, because what had happened is that this agenda had been, to some extent, hijacked by US and European Union interests. And we felt that we would like a better system. So we lobbied quite hard inside the G20 for them to change the approach to equivalence. And in particular, that the G20 makes a decision on equivalence framework and not the EU and the US. And so I think what we, the Treasury, and I'm not speaking necessarily for this, but I think we see the G20 as a really good opportunity for South Africa to influence the global agenda, particularly on financial services regulation. But we take the point that, I think it's just obvious that and I've been in many meetings, that the big countries talk the loudest and the longest. But I think it is a much better forum than the old G8, which we weren't invited. We were sometimes invited, I think President Bush was invited to come out, but we weren't really taken seriously as we are the first one.
I think that's what I take from Minister's question, that let's not hope that it should be upfront that these are the amendments that we're making and we're trying to achieve 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, right? As and the impact thereof in our economy. proceed. And as I said, that what follows is trying to achieve this is more mechanical than anything else, am I right? So we then start with Act number 19 of 2012. Yeah, right. And I think we've deliberated quite a bit on this. And then let's see this hosting up. Page 68. Why don't we give Petula a numbered so that she can refer us to what she's talking about? So as we move along, if there's somebody who has something, please raise your hand.
There are glitches there and there. No one's criticizing anybody's glitches. We have to do our job.
I understand you, process there is one A, B, C, so you need to tick each and every row.
In the way you're asking the question more explicitly than I am, yeah. What was the, I think you're asking it better. That's what I actually meant. Do we have to do it? And look, let's tread carefully, right? Because I know what, I don't know if you can say the whole page, I suppose, right? But given the sensitivities around this problem, right? There may be some civil society stakeholder, and many of the subcommittees. Remember, ultimately, it's the committee that will take the decision. So let's just do this thing properly. And you, I don't think we should rush because the agreement that you're meeting is going to be thrown out on Monday anyway. So there's no rush. I'm very impressed here because it's brought up to Monday. Which means that by Monday afternoon, I'm sure you'll have finished. Right? And then it's easy. Then you hand it over to the other committees and they will do the job. And you've got hold 2 weeks. Let's just do it the way we do. Do another session on Monday.
Petula, let's come back to the first amendment, which is 1A, right? So we'll go and say 1A. I'm not going to read through it. You'll see 1A. If there's anybody who has got anything, we'll indicate, right? And then, but for sense, I'll tell you when you come to 1D, right? Only after there's a definition there, I would like you to talk into it when I get a tick. Okay, 1A, 1B, 1C, D, what are we doing there, Petula?
Yes, Chair, so that is the definition of what a central counterparty is.
So we
say that it is a clearinghouse that does these specific functions that distinguish it from an open counterparty.
So we okay both A, B, right? And then E, okay? The clearinghouse directive. Okay, that. F. Clearinghouse rules. G. Where is this? I see G there. It's the one. There is G. Where's G A?
So the substitution is for paragraph D. Of the definition of
clear. Okay. Let's continue. H. I. J. Can we talk to that?
So the central what was introduced to the FMA before this amendment was that for each market infrastructure there is an external market to cater for that occasion, in future where they would have money as the cost of tax services. So if we're introducing a CCP as a category of market infrastructure, then you're just allowing that to ensure that we're catching the external central counterparty.
Okay. A, B, C, D, E, boutique, L, M, N. Do you want to talk to you in the clearinghouse? It's N.
Okay, so we're just clarifying there that the independent clearinghouse acts in accordance with the 24. So that's just to ensure the governance of what you mean by independent clearinghouse. Because you have these.
O, we take 270. P, as a central counterparty.
Yes, so then we just say, we just including the definition of what the licensed SSP is, that it must be licensed in terms of the section 49 that is provided for. And similarly for an external central counterparty, that the process for licensing is in section 49.
Tick R. What is the structure? S we tick. T we tick. U. talk to you.
Thank you. The definition of prescribed is inserted in order to ensure that going forward the usage of that term in the legislation is appropriate and includes regulations that may be issued by the minister, where the minister is referred to, and also...
Thank you. The definition is inserted because currently there are numerous references in the Act that refer to prescribed, and it's necessary to amend the definition so that, or to insert a definition so that going forward it appropriately is defined, so that it can, in certain instances, refer to the minister prescribing regulations, or the authority prescribing standards by conduct standards or joint standards. So it's just to allow the term to be appropriately used in the legislation going forward. It's just to align appropriately with how things will be done in terms of the financial sector regulation bill, because now we're going to be having the new types of standards being issued.
Thank you. Can we go to V? It's fine, tick. W, what are you trying to do there?
That is just aligning, inserting a definition that's used in the Financial Sector Regulation Bill into the Financial Markets Act to facilitate the alignment between the two pieces of legislation. And similarly, with the definition of prudential standard and register that follow afterwards. So those are all to align the usage of terms between the legislation, so that there's consistent usage of terms.
What were you using before?
Well, these were terms that were not used before in the Financial Markets Act. There are new terms that we are going to be using as a result of the Financial Sector Regulation Bill. So, like previously, there wasn't the prudential authority, and there weren't, and prudential standards are a new type of standard that's being introduced in terms of the Financial Sector Regulation Bill, and the register is the new register of legislation and other instruments that's going to be established to allow for the dissemination of information. So these are new terms that previously weren't used in the legislation, but they're going to be used throughout the financial sector legislation going forward. So with the different pieces of legislation, we are inserting some of these terms to the other financial sector laws to enable them all to be interpreted in a consistent manner and to be able to be implemented appropriately and clearly going forward.
Just for completion again, the pieces of legislation that we say are going to be affected by the changes in the FSR bill, right? Can you just repeat those for us? Because I'm sure these are the sessions that you are talking about, am I right?
Yes, like with each of the law legislation that's termed financial sector law, as well as a few additional pieces of legislation, we're having to make amendments in these consequential amendments to align them with what's happening in the financial sector regulation bill, and specifically with those pieces of legislation that are defined in Schedule 1 of the bill as being financial sector laws. We're needing to make amendments to enable the new regulatory authorities, the Prudential Authority and the Conduct Authority, to be able respectively to implement the legislation that they're responsible for in accordance with the Financial Sector Regulation Act when it will be enacted. And so to facilitate that, to make it clear how the legislation will be interpreted, we are proposing in the various pieces of legislation to insert some of these terms that are used in the Financial Sector Regulation Bill that previously weren't used in the other pieces of legislation before. So with respect to a lot of these definitions, and then as we go forward, we'll be looking at a new section that we'll be introducing into the various sectoral laws as a new section 1A. Those are really to facilitate the alignment and the exercise of the powers by the authorities in terms of the other pieces of legislation, so that the operation of the different pieces of legislation works well together and can be implemented appropriately and consistently. Yes.
So just to take on this, to follow up on what the chair was saying, so this exercise now refers specifically to Act number 19, looking at everything that has to be realigned accordingly, so that when we interpret it, it's consistent with what the FSRD is saying.
Yes, that's right. With each of the financial sector laws, we had to go through and analyze carefully. And all of the amendments really sort of flow from appropriate alignment with the new legislation, yes.
So, well, then correctly you say, a lot of discussions had happened. These, as you are saying, are consequential decisions that we have taken. Because we have taken it that we are coming to the FSRB. We've gone through the FSRB. Yeah, but since we have agreed on those things, then this impacts on the many other legislation that we have. This particular one is Act number 19 of 2012, which is a consequence of us having discussed and agreed on a number of things. That's why I was saying that it becomes a very mechanical exercise, because more discussions would have happened when we're dealing with the Act. Once we have agreed on that thing, it follows that these changes we must make. I don't think we have a choice. Once we agree with the previous discussions and so on, we agree to change or to adopt certain sections of the FSRB, then here we must do these amendments. Because these are amendments on the Act that are already there. So, correct.
Yes, certainly that is correct. The consequential amendments generally are considered to be necessary amendments that have to be made in other legislation to align appropriately with what's happening in the primary legislation that's being enacted. Yes, that's correct.
I know I may be out of order, but because of my absence in the committee, this exercise also allows you to replace certain members.
Yes, and there are a few pieces of legislation as we go through that are having to be repealed as a result, such as the Financial Services Board Act, the Inspection of Financial Institutions Act, and a couple of other pieces of legislation. So sometimes, yes, there are necessary to repeal if it's no longer, it's become redundant, or it may be in conflict with what's being done going forward. Yes.
Okay, let's continue with W on page 17. Repeat that. I think you said this before, that I think it was you spoke about the register, that whatever register appears, you say it's a little bit old fashioned.
Yes.
So you are taking out it by inserting in, for instance, prudential authority and so on and so forth. What? Okay, please. Agreed. Okay, one page, 71. X, finding a regulated person, right? Right? X, then there's A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L. So X we tick, right? Can I read? Advocate, please, as we go along, please just make sure that we are still within the law. JL, Y, and as we go along, guys, you know, again, if you want to highlight the areas where again there was a controversy and so on, and where you ended up agreeing on a particular position, just bring that to our attention so that we can also look into it.
Yeah, Chair, the controversy actually only arises quite a few pages. So, I think we're going to go into territory now that is very similar to what has happened in the other laws that we discussed yesterday, and hopefully.
So they are saying, where is the control is going to come from?
It's all the way along forward under the licensing requirements for a CCP, so that's 28. But
we definitely would like to spend more time. We say just let us know that there was a controversy around this issue, and here were the issues, and that's how they were resolved.
Yeah.
We'd like to. Okay, well, we've just finished X, Y. Z. Both 1, 2, Z, A. Can you go to the next page? Which is page 72. Tribunal. ZB, ZC.
ZC is intended, and this is a provision that we propose inserting in much of the legislation that we'll be considering. And it's just saying that if it happens that there's another term that is used in the provisions that we're amending in these consequential amendments, or that's used elsewhere in the legislation that has a meaning that is defined in the main financial sector regulation bill, then that term will have the meaning as defined in the main bill, the financial sector regulation bill. So we didn't have to define every single term that's used in the financial sector regulation bill and all of the other legislation wherever it's used. We've tried to define some of the terms that are used frequently, but there may be other terms that maybe are used in the financial sector regulation bill that we don't necessarily have to define all of them in the other legislation. This provision provides that those would have the same meaning as in the financial sector regulation bill, so there is consistency of interpretation.
Three.
Okay, now, three is identical to what we discussed yesterday. So what to put under three appears in every single of the constitutional amendments. And so I think we discussed this one yesterday.
What I'm saying, for as long as the FSR Act is not in place, then...
Yeah.
Oh, that's a specific, yeah, that's a good point.
Just the relationship between
yes.
the two. Maybe explain to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should explain the relationship between the
two. Now, looking at the subsection 2 in 1A, that is actually a different provision that's inserted in this particular act that isn't necessary in all of the other acts. So it's very good that you had asked about that. And so the intention of that is that there might be a slight possibility, given when different provisions in the Financial Sector Regulation Act may be brought into operation, or when the different consequential amendments may be brought into operation, there's a slight possibility that it may be decided that we need to bring in consequential amendments in for the Financial Markets Act in actually before some of the provisions in the financial market or in the main bill could be brought into operation. And so this is just to provide that if there was some necessity that, say for instance, the Prudential Authority was not yet established, but that the Registrar of Banks would, until the Prudential Authority is established, exercise the powers that now would be listed as being powers of the Prudential Authority, but just for a temporary transitional period. And so the Registrar of Banks would perform that function and if that was necessary. And if the Financial Sector Conduct Authority was not necessarily brought into operation yet, the Financial Services Board, or the Registrar of the Financial Services Board would exercise those powers for a temporary period. We hope that that may not ever have to actually happen, but we just recognize there may be a situation that might arise. We just wanted to try to accommodate just in case. So it's a very temporary potential transition arrangement, just to allow powers and functions to be exercised in a brief transitional period. Yes.
Thank you. So we check three.